Welcome to Tribe Talk, the bi-monthly podcast by Tribe of Women. I'm Amy Robinson, founder of Tribe of Women. During each episode, I'll be joined by members of my tribe as we hear from guest speakers and powerful women who connect to our mission to establish cultures of women supporting women and recognizing more good men. We will also tell stories of you, our listeners, working in your communities to support your tribes and to answer your questions about how to grow the tribe of women together. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get started.
Welcome to Tribe Talk. I'm Lorraine Mosier, your co-host with Tribe of Women founder Amy Robinson. We're broadcasting from the pod at The Artist Evolution. The Artist Evolution is a full-service marketing group and one of our podcast sponsors. You can find them in this great studio at theartistevolution.com. Hey, Amy.
Hey, Lorraine. Here we are again. Another beautiful day in this beautiful studio with beautiful you.
Aw, thank you.
And I'm so glad that you said thank you.
That was a reference to our podcast guest, Dr. Margaret, and her tips on everything from embracing who you are and compliments to bringing diversity into your tribe, too. Well, we want everyone to listen, so we're not going to give it all away, right?
Right, exactly. Yes, except to say that it is packed with solid tips, advice, and wisdom, and that not only will she be a recurring guest for our Tribe Tip segment, we're inviting you to send your questions to her, to us, at info@tribeofwomen.com.
And that's all we're going to say.
Yes, that she is awesome. We have to add that.
Yes, we really do love her.
And we also want you to listen to the podcast.
Okay, and we're done.
Okay. It just keeps getting better, doesn't it?
It really does. And today, we're going to continue to raise the bar.
Oh, yes. Today is particularly special. Our guest today is not only an accomplished power entrepreneur, she is sharing her story with the world through her latest book, Leading Through the Turn. This also happens to be the exact book I needed to read at this stage in the growth of Tribe of Women. And maybe the best part is that I consider her to be part of my tribe.
Well, she's about to be part of everyone's tribe with this book because cover to cover, it's full of real and relatable stories. And I don't really feel like you need to be an entrepreneur to feel connected to her. I am excited to grow my tribe with her today as well.
Yes. Today, we are welcoming Elise Mitchell, founder and CEO of Mitchell Communications and CEO of the Dentsu Aegis Public Relations Network. She has been named Entrepreneur of the Year and Agency Professional of the Year while being a wife, mom, and motorcyclist with a passion that shaped the title and theme of her book, Woo-hoo. Leading Through the Turn. Welcome, Elise.
Thank you. I am so excited to be here.
Oh,
thanks for having me.
So excited to have you. As I mentioned, this book was exactly what I needed to read right now. And I hear through the grapevine that that's happening with a lot of people at a lot of different stages.
Thank you. Well, and you know, that is, it's an honor for me to be able to have anything that I could say and share with others to be helpful. That was actually the goal of the book when I sat down to write it, was I thought to myself, I just want to help other people lead at their best. And you know, I learned so much in the trenches along the way. I would have given anything to have had a leadership handbook like this, but there wasn't one at the time. Not really, not in the way that I really needed it. And I thought this would just be a way to pay it forward. So many people helped me along the way, as we all have had mentors and tribes that have helped us. And I thought this could be a way to really pay it forward, to share with others all that I learned. And believe me, I had nowhere to go but up. So there's a lot of lessons in there.
There are so many tribe themes and so much alignment with what we're doing.
Yes. Tribe it forward is one of the things
I'll have to adopt that one. Yeah. That's a good one.
Well, I love how it's organized, and it's really easy to read. It's full of affirmations. So it's one of those books where you nod your head and you're like, yes, but there's also a lot of new ideas and actually very solid tips. So it's very organized, and you've got some reflections and some other things that people can really dig into and hold on to past reading the book. So I love that.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about, and I know you and I have talked about this before, but Why was now a good time to write the book? And also tell us about the process and how that was for you personally.
I get asked that question a lot. And I do love to share that story, too, because I'm on another part of my professional journey, which is trying to learn to be an author, which is a very interesting journey to be on, believe me. The publishing industry changed dramatically through the years. Yeah. But it's been a ton of fun. And when I have always spoken publicly with my firm and being in a marketing communications industry, as I am. And people used, when I would speak, they would say, you really should write a book, which I think everybody tells everybody that. And that's always very nice of them to say. But at some point, I began to think more seriously about it when I realized that really, when we built Mitchell Communications Group from scratch and then ended up selling it to a global organization, and it was based in the middle of nowhere, basically at that time, 20 years ago, it felt like this was the middle of nowhere. It's a very unusual Cinderella story. Mm-hmm. And it's a great story for entrepreneurs, as Lorraine had mentioned, but also, to me, it was I wanted to share my leader's journey. Mm-hmm. Over 20 years of stepping into leadership for the first time, being scared to death, thinking I had oversold myself and was, you know, the whole fraud syndrome that you always have when you're stretching and growing. Yes. And then all along the way, everything I learned. In fact, we counted up. At some point, somebody said, well, how many lessons are in there? And I was like, well, golly, I don't know. So I thought, well, I better count. There are 55 different leadership lessons in the book. Wow. And at the end of each chapter, there is a section called The Road Ahead, which is like a workbook section where you can read the chapter, for example, a chapter on building teams or building a compelling culture or being an authentic leader, whatever topic I'm covering in that chapter. Then there's a workbook section at the end of each chapter where you take those lessons and apply them to yourself. Yeah. Because my ultimate goal was, I want to help other leaders lead at their best. Yeah. And so it was a very interesting and reflective experience to be an author. As I tell people, if you have that dream and desire, just do it. Yeah. You can self-publish. I was very fortunate to have McGraw-Hill as my publisher, but you don't have to go the traditional publishing route. You can publish yourself, and many people do. And just the experience of writing and reflecting and ultimately trying to pull out a higher message for your story that is applicable to other people and adds value to their lives, that's the real goal. That whether you sell one copy or a million, is you want to be able to say something that would be valuable and meaningful to change other people's lives. That's really should be the ultimate goal of every author.
Absolutely. Well, and I have my book here in the studio with us, and you notice how many tabs I have in it.
I do see that.
There's lots of, and if you open it up, of course, it's underlined and highlighted in all kinds
of places.
That's
exactly how I read books. I dog-ear them all to death, but I like to go back and find that nugget, you know.
Exactly. So. And I think that that's one of the other things in here is the relatable stories that you tell. And you have to go to a real place to do that. And that's not always easy to do, is to put it all out there.
You know, I'll tell a funny story that will, and I do think this is another valuable lesson for authors, is I remember when I first decided to actually sit down and write it for a lot of different reasons. And I thought to myself, well, you know, this is my chance to show the world how perfect and smart I am. You know, this is the little voice inside my head, you know, write a book to show how perfect and smart you are. Well, fortunately, I called an accountability committee together of some of my dearest friends and people that have known me professionally and watched us build Mitchell Communications through the years, and even to when we sold it and moved into our global network. And I said, okay, guys, you know, here's the outline of the book. Here's a couple of sample chapters. You know, what do you think? You know, and I had wooed them to my office with pizza one night to bribe them to get them there, you know, and they had all kind of read through it and they were like, well, it's good, but you ever had somebody, and they kind of turned their head to the side, and I was like, what? They said, you're not really writing about all the hard stuff. I was like, oh, well, I don't want to write about the hard. Are you kidding? You know, that, no, then that really ruins the perfect and smart image I'm trying to convey. And after a couple of hours of just really great, honest conversation, they convinced me, rightly so, that if you really want to help people, you need to tell what happened and what is. And that is, it's hard to be a leader. Yes. You have fears, failures, obstacles, shortcomings, anger, frustration, despair and depression, you know, all the awful stuff in life is absolutely a part of a leader's journey, and particularly an entrepreneur's journey. And if I really want to help people, I should tell them what really happened. And when I decided to do that, it just flowed. It's amazing. Yes. You know, when you decide to tell truth and tell the whole truth, it's so easy. You don't have to make anything up.
And cathartic and therapeutic cathartic in the process. Right.
And I also realized that by doing that, I was making myself vulnerable, yes. which is, I think now, looking mm-hmm. back in hindsight, was made a more powerful read and a more honest and believable and relatable read yes. where people could see, oh my gosh, she really struggled, yes. you know, and then, but how did she get back up on her horse and keep writing, you know, yes. and that's the story of resiliency. So yes. you don't ever want to paint this picture of, oh, well, I'm perfect because A, nobody's going to believe it. And B, you're not helping anybody.
Right.
But if you just tell them about your real journey, you know, hopefully that there are parts that people can say, oh my gosh, I struggle, but I can get back up and I can keep going too. If she did it, I could do it. You know, right. that's what I hope people would say.
Yeah. Oh, and they do. And you tell a lot of those stories. I think one of them that I relate to, of course, because we both moved to Northwest Arkansas from outside places and came hesitantly.
Mm-hmm. I call it kicking and screaming.
Okay. I was going to say that, but I was going to let you say that. And, you know, you tell a story of sitting in your lawn chair in the driveway kind of in protest for days mm-hmm. just to avoid talking to your husband about
it. I was. And, you know, the higher message of that experience for me when I said, you know what, but I love him and mm-hmm. I want to come here. And either you can go and be bitter about mm-hmm. an unexpected change, unwanted mm-hmm. detour in your life, mm-hmm. or you can go and let change make you better. And you decide. And I thought, how many people have detours in their life, personally, professionally? Well, everybody does. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when I speak, I often will say to people, what detour are you in right now in your life? Mm-hmm. How's that going for you?
Yeah.
Are you bitter? Or are you going to let that change make you better? It's up to you to go forward from here and make the best of it. And, you know, I look back now and I see what a fantastic life we had here.
Yeah.
Great place to live, work, raise a family, build a company.
Yes.
Who knows? You could end
when you realize that you actually survive it, you actually sometimes seek the detour. Uh-huh.
That's right.
Seek the not norm. Embrace and out of your comfort zone.
Embrace it. Everybody goes through detours in their life all the time. And mm-hmm. the point is not what happens to you, but how you respond mm-hmm. to what happens in your life that defines you as a character, your character as a leader, as a person. Mm-hmm. Everybody struggles, but mm-hmm. it's how you work to overcome them that really is what matters.
And here you and I are.
And here we are.
So
turned out pretty
years
good.
Later, it turned out great.
Yes, it did. It did.
Well, one of the stories that you tell is about a woman in your tribe, Wendy Davis, mm-hmm. and how she develops herself in that it's not a one-and-done process, which I think mm-hmm. is a lot of what we're talking mm-hmm. about here, that there's all these iterations and we're constantly when we get out of our comfort zone, we're going to be in a learning curve, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to be trying to figure things out. And your book is very well organized, like you said, and you know, our pillars of tribe, I see you, I hear you, I feel you, seems very organized. But the whole point of all of it is that it's an iterative process mm-hmm. and we might get it figured out one day, but then we've got to go and get it figured mm-hmm. out again another day. And so I loved that, that she said that. And so we're definitely through our conversation today going to keep mm-hmm. in mind that it's a journey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wendy Davidson, my friend Wendy.
Oh,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Davidson.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Yes. And she is an amazing person and leader, and she's in my tribe.
Yes, she is.
And we have realized years ago when we began to get close was we call ourselves fellow journeyers mm-hmm. because it is a journey. Life mm-hmm. is a journey, not a destination. And that's what I realized. That's kind of the core theme of my book mm-hmm. was I was always this what I call a destination leader. Very driven, very results oriented, always focused on getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest was just scenery, right?
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh my goodness.
I'm missing the scenery.
I'm missing the journey, which is part of how I learned to ride a motorcycle with my husband. And that actually began, that was at a pivotal time in my life mm-hmm. where it kind of woke me up to the fact that I never was doing anything for fun, was not spending time with my husband or
I
my children.
That.
Yeah. And that's part of one of my key lessons in the book is enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
And I teach that message to people to say, it doesn't matter what you love to do, but what is it that you're passionate about in your life that you're not doing right now because you don't think you have the time, mm-hmm. the money, the energy. And what are you waiting for? Mm-hmm. Are you waiting till you retire? Are you waiting till the kids are gone? Are you waiting till you have all this money and your retirement is, mm-hmm. you know, rolling in the dough? Don't wait for any of those things. You need to start today to work passion back into your life. And I've had so many people write me and call me, email me later and say, after I heard you speak, after I read the book, I took up my passion of my youth, which was, one woman told me recently, she said it was photography. I sat with my husband and I said, I really miss the camera and I want to go back into the studio and I want to learn. And just, it was so exciting for me to hear those stories because she's a hard worker. She's a very successful professional, but you need to live. Ambition is not what it's all about. It's okay to have ambition, but you need to live a full life. And that's what makes, I believe, for an actually much more sustainable and rewarding leadership experience, because you don't burn out, you don't crash, you don't jump off the deep end, you don't have all the temptations of leadership and success that take you down a bad place.
I think part of the importance of this is that women need to know that's okay. That's okay. It's like permission and encouragement. We just, I'm just taking it all in.
We say a lot of our job is just is giving permission.
Permission. Absolutely. Oh, I love that. That's very good.
I feel like the first part of your book addresses many things we hear about in women's journeys to self-love and acceptance. Right out of the gate, you touch on how we beat ourselves up and how fear of not having all the answers can stand in our way, and how tapping into our instincts is a power we underestimate. What do you think are some of the underlying reasons for this? And how can we, as women especially, what can we do to move beyond and embrace who we are?
Well, it's a good question because I think one of the big fears, and I have a weekly email and blog, by the way, I should say, which I'd love for people to follow at elisemitchell.com. But last week's blog post was on fear, facing your fears and overcoming what scares you most. Because in especially my own personal experience, but in what I see in other people, there are so many things that we are afraid of that hold us back. And one of them is the fear of looking foolish. That's one of the fears I talk about when the chapter where I tell the story of basically what happened was our company went through this 5-year period of exponential growth. We grew over 500% in 5 years. And I remember when it started happening, I know, it was such an exciting time, but it was the scaredest I've ever been as a leader, believe it or not. That was when I was scaredest, because people would come literally running into my office, wringing their hands. They would say, Elise, we have this new problem because of the growth, which was a good thing. But yet, nonetheless, there were all these problems were happening. Our systems are not working anymore. We need more help. The quality of our business, you know, maybe is suffering because we're trying to push too many things out the door because we're working overnight and all these crazy things. And, you know, which is very natural to happen in stages of very hyper growth. Yes. But there are things that could threaten this long-term success of your business. They would say, what are we going to do about these problems? And I would think to myself, I have no idea. Because, like, would I know? Why would I know? I am a great professional in my business. But here I am now. Basically, I had put another hat on. I was running a multi-million dollar business. I was a business professional running and building a company. I really was no longer that much doing as much of my craft. So I'd moved from being a master craftswoman to becoming a business manager and leader and executive. And I had no idea what to do. I'd never been here before. Yes. And what I had to learn in that moment was, I don't know the answer. And so I can either fake it or I can make up an answer and pretend like I knew that it was the right thing. Yeah, I knew everything. Or I can look at my people and say, I don't know, but I also know I can't end the sentence there. I must do whatever it takes to find out. Mm-hmm. And the best leaders are the ones who will say that, I don't know the answer, but I will do whatever it takes to find out. And I want your help to find the right solution for us, an inclusive leader. Mm-hmm. And what you do, the lesson I learned when I started doing that was that A, people didn't necessarily expect me to know the answer, but B, they absolutely expected me to find the answer, and C, they were thrilled when I asked them to join the process. Right. And what I so began important. To model was being a learning leader. And I think this is key. So you don't worry about appearing foolish. You only will appear foolish if you don't go find the answer and if you don't learn and grow. Mm-hmm. But if if you say, I'm absolutely going to go find that answer. Roll up the sleeves, figure it out, and then look how much wiser, smarter, faster, stronger we are because we learned and we learned together. And then you give permission to people around you to say, well, I don't know, but I want to learn. Right. I want to grow. Yeah. And then you become a growing organization instead of an organization where people walk around posturing or they have pride and they think they can't let on that they don't know all the answers. Yeah, but I don't know anybody who does.
You end up in perfection paralysis because everybody's trying to do it in secret at night until it's perfect. Just
don't worry about appearing perfectly smart. Be a learner and be diligent and determined and relentless about learning. And guess what? You know, you'll always grow. And then you will eventually find answers. And sometimes you'll find new answers to new problems and they become new solutions that can set the benchmark for your industry. I mean, there's no telling what you could do if you're committed to learning.
And a lot of that in the book, you talk about kind of that internal dialogue that we all suffer from imposter syndrome, which is one of the things that you just mentioned. Not all of us, but women actually more so than men. We learned from Dr. Margaret in our last episode. And those kinds of things, that internal dialogue and giving ourselves permission. We don't always have to get permission from the outside and cover the
inside,
too.
Sometimes it starts from the end. Yeah, the internal battle is the hardest, right? We have to start there.
Exactly. Well, an absolute favorite quote from the book for me is, one of the worst mistakes leaders make is trying to be something they're not. And you have multiple be you, is what we call it, be you gems. In the book, and several tools to help people get there. You encourage people to find their own leadership style, which I love. And I am very partial to servant leadership, which is a style that you mentioned in the book. And I suppose I was attracted to training in it because that's me. That's what I identified with. And I felt like that fit who I was as a leader. But you also have several others listed, and I'd say that throughout the book you reiterate that they are all okay, that it's matching your leadership style with who you are, and that we just need to find what's right from us and lead from there. So you have a company that is full of women, and maybe even a majority women, would you say?
Yep, the majority.
Absolutely. Yeah. What have you seen as a woman leading women about being comfortable enough with ourselves and who we are to be able to find that leadership style and connect with it?
Well, again, I think that as a leader, you are the role model that people look to, you know, for either permission or for inspiration, correction, whatever it may be. So you really need to start by working on yourself and say, okay, as I said a minute ago, the internal battle is the hardest. And we often want to look at everybody else to tell them, you know, you need to be this and you need to do that. And in fact, we often say, okay, you know, how do I be the best Elise I can be? How do I give you the best leader I can be? What do I need to be working on? And you always have your own sort of development plan for yourself as a leader and as a professional. And if, again, that's the idea of being the learning, the growing, the developing leader is important. But the authentic, the way you're getting at it, the authentic leader is a person who has confidence that they draw from within about who they are because they know who they are and they feel good about it. And, you know, and that probably goes way back to when you were a child and how your parents or those around you raised you and encouraged you to be yourself. And I tell a story about my mom and how she released me at a very young age to be myself and be me.
I love that story.
Yeah. And, you know, we sort of need a little bit of that encouragement in our early years. But then as we grow older and become more experienced professionals, I do think it's important to your question about that once you have some of that battle tackled within yourself, and it's a journey, you know, but you need to be giving people permission around you to be authentically themselves and to encourage that in them and to not weigh one leadership style over another. We had a room of interns in a couple weeks ago at Mitchell. We do a program, a spring break program every year called Big Break, where we bring in rising college seniors
to have a
week
break
at our agency. And one of them said, they were talking about my book because they all had a, they said, which leadership style is the best? And people kind of leaned into what I would say. And I would say, the best leadership style is whatever your style is for you. And you need to bring it and you need to own it and feel really confident about the fact that I have, as Robin Williams said in Dead Poets, I can contribute a verse There's something that I have to offer the universe that is unique in my perspective and is valuable to others to share. And I need to be confident about putting that out there. And then the other part of it is, as a leader, you don't engender competitiveness overtly. You don't, it isn't good. It's okay to have peer-to-peer competitive pressure. That's okay. Yeah. But you don't try to pit people one against another, like Amy's style is better than Lorraine's style. You know, that's not, especially among women, don't encourage competition amongst each other. My my strategy is to I have sort of a one for all and all for one, which is if Mitchell wins, well, we always say start first. If our clients win, we win. And if Mitchell wins, you win. Yes. And it there's no one department that's more important than another, no one leader that has a style that's more... You know, are we ascribing to the values of our company? That's one of the places that we look for excellence. But you can bring your leadership style to life in all kinds of ways. The important thing is to be authentically yourself, or as I like to say in the book, dare to be yourself.
Yes, that collective and honoring diversity and honoring those different perspectives. And that's incredible and important in a company and also in life, in our outside of work tribes, in our everyday tribes, is bringing people together and saying, you know what, you're different, and that's great.
And what can I learn from you?
Yes.
What can you share with me? How can I be a better leader because of knowing you?
Yeah.
Well, you've obviously built a great company and a great brand, and we know that that's built with great people. You also write about building tribes and nurturing relationships overall. We say, follow your light, when we talk about building tribes. So when you say, people follow people, not titles, that really resonates. Can you talk a little bit about your personal and professional tribe building, where they meet and how they flow?
So, yes, I love that. What a great topic. I wish I could talk about that forever. It is so important that you have community, or in your language to say that you're in a tribe. I've taught this to younger professionals too. In fact, Wendy and I did a leadership summit together a couple of months ago where we each had our own individual presentations we did, and then we did a joint one. We came up on stage, and the full focus of that time together in front of those young leaders was to talk about the importance of our friendship and that we were part of a larger tribe. So the tribe that we are in, Wendy and I are both in this same particular tribe, is a group of about 8 women, and we have a lot of things in common, but we also have a lot of things that are very unique and different about us. But we meet a couple times a year, and in fact, Wendy and I, through our friendship, before we became part of a larger tribe, we had this commitment to each other because we live in different cities and states. We said we're going to see each other eye to eye once a quarter. You know, even if we have to kill ourselves to get there, we will do it, or if we have to drag our husbands, or but we're going to get together. And usually, it's we find ways to speak together events or to do professional development type things. But sometimes it's just, you know, meet me here and we're going to spend a weekend together.
We call that a healthy habit of tribe.
Yes. And the magic happens. The last time our tribe was together, we have a small house in Annapolis, Maryland, because our son goes to the Naval Academy. Yay, I'm so proud of him. And our daughter's amazing. She goes to law school at Penn State. So that so having a little outpost of a home up there works well, because we can be close to both our children, which we're absolutely crazy about them both. And the last time our tribe got together, I invited the tribe to come to the house for the weekend in Annapolis. And it is magic. You know, it's like the slumber parties that you used to have when you were a kid. We sit around the living room. Everybody props up on a stool or a chair or something. And everybody's got your popcorn out, whatever it is. But you're just talking. Every single time, something powerful comes forward to the tribe from one member. And it's unexpected, but it's a struggle that they're dealing with in their life at this moment. And, you know, we laugh, we cry, we sing kumbaya, you know, but basically we say, okay, here's what you need to do. And people give advice and encouragement and support to that person. And I have often thought, it may not be my time, because every time we get together, I don't always have an issue, but sometimes there might be a time, or I really need the tribe badly. And we may not be physically together, but we have a text group that we text stream to each other when something is going on, and we can send immediate encouragement to each other and support and feedback, like, guys, what should I do about this? And they'll say, okay, here's my view, you know, and so you feel like you have this sounding board or this accountability committee who's got your back.
We need the wisdom of women.
Yes, we do. And when powerful. You create those safe places, that's really what it is. You're creating that safe place of acceptance where that's you're like, whatever's going on, mm-hmm. we are open and we're listening.
And we're with you.
And it can be friends or strangers. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you create that place, people, women especially, open up and we dive real deep, real fast, mm-hmm. And talk about some hard stuff. And it doesn't have to be structured necessarily. As a matter of fact, a lot of the time, the looser you are, the more just kind of hanging out. Yeah. And
I call that sloppy quantity time. That's what we talked about in the book. Sloppy quantity time, not the minimal quality time. We all convince ourselves we should be spending with our children. No. It's the sloppy quantity time when you create the safe environment, like the dashboard lights, the story I tell about my daughter when we were in the car driving back and forth from these cheer competitions that she did for 7 years. And just in the glow of the dashboard lights at night, the voice from the back seat, she would say, "Mom, can I ask you a question?" Yeah. And I write about that because it's a way I learned. Turn your phone off. Turn the radio off. Mm-hmm. Just be present. Listen. Be present. And you never know. It may not happen every time, but when it does, it's magic. Yeah.
Yeah. My children, their unspoken sign is to follow me around. So I know that if they're kind of in the kitchen.
Could I try that with you, Amy? Would you pay attention to me if I follow you around?
They just kind of are in the same space that I'm in.
And you're like, so what's going on?
Okay, so I guess we're going to talk now.
When my daughter was 2, I got that message in a different way. I was on a conference call, and I was walking around a front porch at our first house here in Fayetteville. And she was with me, and I thought to myself, I'm getting the brownie point because I'm physically with her, but I was on this conference call. Mm-hmm. And at some point in the conference call, she reached over and she bit my hand. Yeah. And I said, you know, guys, I'm going to have to drop right now. I'll catch up with you a little bit later. And I looked down at her. She's like, Mommy, you know, let's go play. And I thought, wow. You know, but you're right. When they're older, they don't bite your hand. You know, they run away.
Oh, it gets much more subtle and ugly. Yeah. When it gets, because...
Well, I think that one of the other things that, you know, you talk about scrapping the map, and we talked about being here in Northwest Arkansas. So we actually went off the map, according to some of our friends, right?
Yes, kind of. Where is that?
Well, and I love the quote where you say that entrepreneurship can suck the very life out of even the most optimistic and tenacious individual, which is so true. Yet, here we are. Still, we're surviving.
Yep.
And you talk about a few things that I think relate to the statement. One is about risk-taking and how we have perceived limitations that stand in our way. But you also talk about the power of enthusiasm and passion that make up for lack of experience. And you combine that with your message of authenticity and vulnerability. And I think you have such a strong message for women especially. So how do you think that women can embrace all that we are as unique leaders, remove our perceived limits, and tap into our true-to-us qualities and lead from those places?
You touched on one particular part of the success equation, which I still will aspire to for the rest of my life to get there. but one of the things that you touched on, I think, really jumps out at me, and that's the idea about risk-taking. Because I do believe that it starts with, you know, knowing yourself, the authentic you, we've talked about that, giving yourself permission to not know every answer, but to go find out and to be a diligent, committed, lifelong learner. But the third part of that equation is courage, taking risks. That's another fear I wrote about the other day in my blog. The fear of failure, which I will tell you, in all honesty, that was the fear that haunted me my whole life. And I think it's because very driven people are motivated by a fear of failure, which is I think okay to a degree, because you don't want to fail. So it pushes you to keep trying and find that solution. And you often do get the victory from that. But if you let it consume you, it holds you back from taking risk. And as I was building the company, there were so many times, I mean, it was constant, the amount of risk taking, and my risk tolerance had to be very high. And I did learn over time that I wasn't really, I didn't have to be afraid of failure, because in fact, failure becomes the most powerful lessons that you learn. And often failure is not the end. It's not the death. It is the iteration. It's the next step in the learning process. Okay, so that didn't work. What do I learn from that? And how do I come back and get closer to the win?
Entrepreneurship says fail fast.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And I love that now. I think it's much more hip and in to talk about failure. Yeah. You know, like I ran 4 failed companies. It's kind of like oh, great. You know, that's what everybody says in Silicon Valley. But I do believe that you have to embrace failure and understand it. You can minimize your chances of failure by being smart about taking risk. And I write two chapters in the book on what I call practical innovation and understanding that you have to innovate in your business and you have to get good at risk taking, but there's calculated ways to do it. Yes. To where I consider myself, that I actually had a story about this. I had a business consultant once tell me, Elise, you're one of the most courageous risk takers. You're such a big risk taker. And at first I was really upset about that. I was like, well, that makes it sound like I just, you know, like crouch you. Like, yeah, just do whatever, you know? And he said, no, calculated risk taker. I said, oh, okay, that I like. Yes. Because he said, you're very strategic and you're very prudent, but you do not hesitate to go for it. Yes. And part of that is what I call, you have to stare down the tiger of what is holding you back. Yes. And if your fear of failure is holding you back, you have to look at that tiger in the eye and you have to get up and you have to walk right past it and say, you don't owe me anymore. Mm-hmm. And I remember very specifically in my leadership journey when I actually finally did that. And it was powerful because what I realized, this is sort of was the epiphany for me, more than the fear of failure, more than failure, what I feared most of all was losing self-respect, was doing something somehow that would violate my values, my sense of integrity, and that I would look back and I would always regret. And I realized that it was more powerful what I thought of myself than what the rest of the world thought about me. And that was the most freeing feeling I have ever had as a professional. Yes. But it took me years to get there. You know, it wasn't until I could have enough internal fortitude and confidence and strength in myself to know, okay, well, I might have failed right here, right now, but I'm going to get back up and I'm going to keep trying and I'm going to do right by those around me. And I'm going to fight for the win for other people who care for me and that I feel committed to because it's the right thing to do, even if nobody else knows it. And those kinds of conversations that you have in your head are immensely more powerful than the ones we have about, oh, what if I fail? Oh, what if I look foolish? You know, all these fears we have are really not fears worth having. It's what you think of yourself and your ability then to power that into courageousness and being bold about being willing to take risks, because you don't really care so much if you fail or other people don't think you're smart. Right. It's what you think of yourself that matters most.
It is. Right. And one of the things you talk about in the book is also about values. And that's, you know, when we talk about companies, it's very common for us to talk about values, but we have values ourselves, and actually we bring those values to companies, especially if we are founding a company. And so what you were talking about was if you went against your values, you felt like that was where you had that integrity challenge and where
That's
you
right.
felt like a real failure. And so I think that, but you also talk about that we have choices of staying within those values, that these external kind of conditions where the mistakes or the risks are taken, mistakes happen, and failures happen. But if we're in alignment with our values through that process, then that makes it okay.
You learn to trust you, and you learned to love yourself through that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And you often read and hear about stories of very successful people who have these horrible failures. You know, they have an affair with somebody, or they embezzle from their company, or, you know, there's just, we read about those almost on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And so many of those things can be avoided, prevented, if people were to stop and I loved what you said, think about their life and make decisions that are aligned with their values. Mm-hmm. They may be in uncomfortable places, like, gosh, I'm leading a big company and I don't know what to do next. Yeah. That's okay, because if I'm aligned with my values, I will know that part of my values are I'm a very resilient, tenacious, determined person. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go and find those answers out so that I can always do right by my company. Mm-hmm. Because that's, for me, I've always said I have a one-word job description, which is steward, kind of back to your idea of servant leadership. I'm a steward of my company. That's all I am. Mm-hmm. And I have to throw my body between it and harm's way. Mm-hmm. I have to think ahead for it. I have to support it. I have to give myself up for it and the other people around me. And that was one of the most powerful lessons I ever learned as a leader, was how to give all the good stuff away to other leaders around me. Mm-hmm. And when that's kind of when you realize it's not about you, it's about everybody.
That's so powerful and influences at so many different levels, because it's even harder if you're not being that servant leader that really cares like that and has values, that others respond to that. And the situations that they're put in, there's just so many ramifications. It's amazing.
And people follow people like that,
absolutely.
Not titles. If you're a leader like that, I don't care if you're leading one person, if you're leading your family, if you're leading your church, if you're leading community, I don't care where you're leading. If you're a leader who cares about others more than they care about themselves, people will follow that leader every day of the week.
That and we all are leaders at every stage
absolutely
of our
life. We are. Right. Yeah. You bet. Absolutely.
And when we talk about giving and loving others and being that servant leader, I know your book is full of stories of paving the way and giving back. One of our values is gifts. So we're very much on board with the many ways that you found to do good and to give gifts. I love the story near the end of your book about the gentleman gene and how it leads to the realization. And the real question is, what are we harvesting? Mm-hmm. Well, you're talking and working with women and men about building healthy tribes, but to tribe it forward, what are some of the ways that you would want to share about the importance and the ways and the benefits of doing just that?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I love that story, too. The story of Gentleman Gene actually came from my motorcycle blog that I wrote years ago when I was first learning to ride. It was a story of a gentleman that I met. I don't want to ruin it because I want people to read the story in the book, but it is one of my favorites. It is a real tearjerker that taught me about, you know, what are you harvesting in life? That's really the answer. The question that we all face, especially as we become older, more experienced leaders, is what's my legacy? What am I doing that's really going to change others for good, not myself? Because early in your career, you're all about yourself. You know, that's just kind of human nature. Yeah. But at some point, the switch is flipped and you begin to realize, oh my goodness, leadership is a privilege. It's an opportunity. It's a responsibility. What am I doing for others? And that's the last part of the book. When I realize I had that whole last section of the book is called the higher calling of leadership, the awakening, the period in my journey when I realized I needed to be all about those around me. And then in fact, that was the more important type of leader for me to be, was somebody who became a leader of other leaders and empowered and equipped and enabled other leaders. Mm-hmm. So a big part of that, one of my favorite stories in the book is when I talk about being at that point in the journey of building a company where I had to learn how to give all the good stuff away to other people and how hard that was. Because if you're an entrepreneur and a founder, you work so hard to build something.
Do it all.
And you can do it. And you tell yourself, I can do it all because I did do it all in the early days. But you shouldn't be doing it all in the future. Mm-hmm. And you need to attract great leaders around you, and then you need to give them all the good stuff. And that's the hardest part. And I do think a lot of leaders, particularly entrepreneurs, can't ever break through that period of time. Mm-hmm. They say, nope, I'm going to hold on to the clients that I love, the jobs and the responsibilities I have in this company, because I'm good at it, and I'm, quote-unquote, I'm in my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly when you need to tell yourself, it is time for me to grow and stretch and give this good stuff to everybody around me so that they can take things to the next level. And then I need to reach up and become a growing leader myself and find more good stuff. That's the kind of leader I do want to be, and that I think when you see other great leaders, they're the ones who have tremendously successful people around them or who have been under their tutelage and that leader helped them soar to new heights.
And as we're talking about that we're leaders through life, you know, we're leaders at all, and you're fostering young leaders and you are giving them the tools to not wait to give gifts, right? To give the gifts now.
Now.
And that we all have something to turn around and give back. And it doesn't have to be monetary. Mm-hmm. It can be as small as a compliment in the grocery store. And how that's being the change and tribing it forward on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Are there any other, you know, kind of small ways, day-to-day ways that anybody could do anything on any day that you would recommend?
One thing I learned in the book, and this is the story of my friend Kent Brantley, who was the doctor that got Ebola in Liberia, which we all made national news. He was brought back to the U.S. and he is healthy again today. He's a very good friend of mine.
Really?
He and his wife, yes, Kent and Amber. And I sat with Kent and was listening to his story because I said, I really want to include this. I think there's something very powerful in your story. And he said, what does a doctor have to tell you about leadership? And I was like, Kent. This story, I don't want to ruin the story in the book, but what I learned from that story, it's a must read. That's one of my favorite stories in the book. It's toward the end, was this idea of you can choose as a leader to treat people transactionally, which is mm-hmm. you work for me. I pay mm-hmm. you a salary. You deliver a set of services, and that's it. It's transactional. Or you can choose to treat people holistically, which is you. I call it sort of loving the whole person, mm-hmm. which is, yes, you're in my employ. Yeah. You work for me. But I'm going to stop in the hallway. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, Amy, how you doing today? Yes. Haven't seen you in a while. How are your kids? What's going on mm-hmm. with you? You know, and just yeah. talking to them. And often people are just, they're just so surprised, you know, that, mm-hmm. you know, you as the busy leader, you know, yes. would stop and take time to look them in the eye mm-hmm. and say, tell me how you doing. And mm-hmm. really be present in the moment. It doesn't have to be a 30-minute conversation. It could be 3 minutes, mm-hmm. but it's genuine and it shows care and concern for them. Mm-hmm. And they are like, wow, you know, somebody really thinks about me as a whole person. And often you will find people will tell you things they're struggling with. And I often, because of my faith, I will say, hey, I'm praying for you about that. Mm-hmm. And be honest and sincere about yes, it. And it just takes important. A minute mm-hmm. to treat people as a whole person mm-hmm. than to just treat them transactionally. I think it is. It's powerful to do that. And because think of how you feel when people yes. do that with you.
Mm-hmm. People value it so much more than absolutely. many yeah. times. Mm-hmm. Is they that do. Just awareness?
Yeah. That I'm loved, I'm appreciated, yes. I'm valued. Somebody.
Very powerful.
Yes. And often people will say that they think of Mitchell as they call it the Mitchell family. Yes. You know, they think of it as yeah. their family. And even those who go on and move on from us because they're building careers and doing other mm-hmm. things or moving to other places, I always sit them down their last day and I say, you're always part of the Mitchell family, mm-hmm. come back and see us and stay close to us.
Love yeah. it.
Well, and when
love
we talk that. About tribes, you know, you and I have stayed in contact over the years. I've never worked for you. I'm not part of the company, but I'm part of your community and part of your tribe, and you do that on a regular basis.
And you've done great things for me, Amy yes. Robinson, as a friend.
Thank you mm. very much. Well, you tribe it right back. Well, you have no idea how great this has been on multiple levels, many, many layers. And, you know, these moments where when circles and ideas and the universe comes together, that's definitely what today has felt like. And I love it. And it's been like that. But we have to let you go with our last and parting question. Why do you believe in tribes of women? Mm.
Because together we are stronger.
Yes.
Yes. You know, to me, it's just the fundamental belief about community. Mm-hmm. We all need community in life. We were not meant to be alone forever. Mm-hmm. You know, to certainly times I like to go off and be by myself. But fundamentally, I'm at my very best when I'm surrounded by people that I love and who love me and who support me. And I could be doing anything. I could be going through a terrible challenge. I could be failing. I could be at my highest moment. But I always want to do it with my community. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be by myself, and I don't think yeah. anybody does. So to me, the tribe concept is you have to have tribes in your mm-hmm. life, and you need to be intentional about building them and nurturing them. Because I want to be there for those people in their darkest times, and I really want them to be there for me too. And that mm-hmm. doesn't just happen. You have to be intentional about having fellow journeyers.
Well, we want to remind everyone that your book is available at Amazon.com mm-hmm. and a lot of other places. Are you in any bookstores at the moment?
Yeah, Barnes & Noble carries
Yay,
us. Yeah, and the best and safest, simplest place to go to is EliseMitchell.com mm-hmm. because everything mm-hmm. about my book, my blog, all of it's there. Mm-hmm. You can have me come speak. You can just read yes. Different things, different posts that we have that I hope yes. are really practical and valuable.
And you're also an audio book.
I am. Mm-hmm. That's right. I'm on Audible now. That's right, which I hate the sound of my voice. I already told you that story.
Oh, I love it.
Thank you.
No, I think it's that authenticity will absolutely come through. And you also, again, mentioning your website, EliseMitchell.com, you have some really cool things coming up. You've got the blog, mm-hmm. but you're working on some neat things. So everybody needs to stay tuned. For
that's
what's
right.
Next.
We are. And I'd love for people to connect with me. We yes. have, we're getting ready to do a whole series of free mm-hmm. downloads, leadership tips and advice, and tackling different types of challenges, things we talk about the book and things that I'm experiencing every day. And yeah. so we hope, again, that it just helps other leaders lead at their best.
Yes, we're growing and learning together mm-hmm. all the time. Absolutely. Well, thank you for being part of my tribe through the years. And I'm so excited that we've been able to be part of growing your book tribe today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
While you support us in growing Tribe of Women. It's a beautiful, virtuous tribe it forward cycle, or in your case, motorcycle.
There you go. Yeah. Get on that thing and ride. Life is a journey, not
it
a destination.
Is. It is. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for having me. This was a great honor for me and just a real, a highlight of my day. Thank
Yay.
You so much.
Oh, Lise, thank you. Thank you so much. Wow, that was incredible, Amy.
I know. We've been so fortunate in the guests we've had on the podcast, and I feel especially fortunate when we have someone like Elise who is able to come into the studio and talk with us.
Yes, and we want to continue ensuring that we have guests that people want to hear from. So this is a good time to remind everyone that we have a podcast survey on our website where you can go and give us feedback and make suggestions.
Yes, it's at tribeofwomen.com, and we like to know when we are or when we are not heading in the right direction and not going too far off the map, right?
Right.
It's a journey.
Exactly. And speaking of right directions, we're excited about the reach the podcast is getting. Did you know that we have listeners in Turkey?
Really? Well, merhaba. Hello to our listeners in Turkey. So with a reach around the world, we really need to know how we're doing. If you have suggestions or you want to hear a guest on the podcast, please fill out the survey.
Yes. And it's important to note, too, that we don't survive on feedback alone.
No, we don't. In addition to the Artist Evolution, we have generous sponsors like In-House Metalworks, who provided us sponsorship that include lovely metal signs that we use at boutique and Tribe Talk events, and Elevate Performance Group that support us with peer advisory forums where we explore how to be the best possible organization for the tribe that supports us. And you can find them at inhousemetalworks.com and elevateperformance.us.
They are awesome.
They are. And we love that they believe in Tribes of Women. Know what else we love?
What?
Tribe tips.
Yes, and we especially love it when we're able to share a worldwide initiative that is happening locally for women everywhere.
Too true. And today we have Elquia Cates, Development Manager for Dress for Success, NWA. Dress for Success has affiliates around the world, as you mentioned, 150 countries, and they've found a special place in our hearts as we've learned and participated in the work that they do and the difference that they make in lives of women every day. Not only that, they are doing more with a new initiative. But that's all I can say because Elquia is in the house.
Hello, Elquia. Hello, I'm so happy to be here. I am excited to be with you ladies and being a part of your tribe. We do have a huge initiative that we have coming up. It's called Open Doors Project. It started on April the 4th, so we would love for everyone to get on board. We are celebrating our 20th year, Dress for Success Worldwide, so we've been reaching women for 20 years. As you stated, we're in 150 countries. We've served a million women to date. Here locally, we're on pace to touch 1,000 lives by the end of 2017. Wow. So it's totally about opening doors for women and giving them opportunities to just be successful economically, to support their families and their communities. So we're really excited to be a part of this huge initiative.
Tell us a little bit more about Dress for Success and kind of the basis of what you do in the individual affiliates every day.
So here locally, we have, as I mentioned, on pace to serve 1,000 women. Mm-hmm. So far, we've served about 668 women since over the last 3 years. So our goal is to serve 400 women by the end of, by the end of this year. Some of our services include employment suiting, where they're going on an interview, or if they have that job, we will suit them with attire for a week's worth of clothes, just to make sure that they're successful. In addition to that, we have workshop series that we help empower them to understand and learn, you know, how can I be successful once I obtain this new career, this new opportunity, just giving them the tools that they need to be successful throughout the rest of their careers.
Yes, and I volunteered for suitings. I did suitings for a while, and we underestimate the power and the confidence that come with being able to look nice and feel good. Women would come in and, just even their demeanor was quiet and subdued. And, you know, you just kind of ask them who they are, what they want to express, and what kind of job are they seeking. And that dream, opening up that door of a dream of, oh, I can be somebody else, and then helping them find attire that suits who they are and where they want to go, they walk out of there a completely new woman.
It's so much more than a suit. It's a community.
It is. And then you do build the community through the professional development, everything from resume writing to networking to just what to do in the workplace. It's wonderful.
It is. And not only that, going back to the image consulting is mm-hmm. what you're referencing. That's
yes,
how I
was an image consultant. Yes, apparently, I didn't yes, even know what I was.
Yes, that's what you were. And that's how I got started with the organization as well, mm-hmm. because of the fact that it's not only, to your point, you know, you're just giving them a suit or mm-hmm. attire, but it's also their story.
Yes.
And that's, you know, the story that they can tell their family members, because I don't know mm-hmm. if you know this fact, is that for every woman that gets suited, they're actually touching 6 lives.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that is really impactful. Mm-hmm. So that's 4,000 families' lives mm-hmm. that have been impacted just because she put on a suit mm-hmm. and her story, you know, she has a new story to tell mm-hmm. or add to that thread of opportunities that she now has. So.
And as image consultants, we don't ask questions.
No.
We don't pry. But a lot of times those stories come out.
They do.
I remember one very impactful. A woman came in and, you know, jeans and boots. And she was probably in her 50s. And she we got her dressed. And, you know, I brought a few things out that she may or may not have tried on otherwise. I remember that there was a flower cardigan that she fell in love with. And she thought, oh, my gosh, I never would have thought to wear these. And at some point in time, I brought out a couple of, you know, low high heels. And then there was kind of a pair that pushed the edge of the height that she thought that she wanted. She put on the cardigan and she put on the shoes. And all she said was, he never wanted me to wear high heels. And she said, but now he doesn't have a say.
Right.
And I just thought, you know, there was a story inside mm-hmm. of that. And that just empowered her to be making her own decisions. And she could vision her life. Mm-hmm. You know, it opened a door for her to be able to look at what her life was going to be ahead of her.
That's powerful.
That is powerful. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of it, is that you mentioned a key word is empower. Mm-hmm. And I think as women, you know, we definitely need that encouragement, you know, from mm-hmm. other women mm-hmm. to say, hey, you know, it's okay. You know, you can own, you know, you can own it. And, you know, and that ownership is empowering in itself. Mm-hmm. Just a blouse, a blazer, yeah. a shoe, you know, what that shoe stands for, which can I, let me
yeah.
go to that
so
segue.
Tell me what that shoe stands for.
So the shoe is a part of our Open Door project. And that shoe symbolizes a lot of positive things, right? Because it goes back to what woman in your life opened a door for you. So within the campaign, you can put a shoe in a door. You can have your power pose in a doorway just to say, hey, you know, I've made it through this door and I'm going to be successful. And I'm also going to reach back to other women, mm-hmm. you know, within this project to say, you know, these are women that have also impacted my life. Mm-hmm. So that's really the movement, you know, that we want to make sure that, you know, as a worldwide and even locally, you know, we want to push the shoe to say, hey, you know, someone opened a door for me in order for me to have a successful path.
And I'm going to stand at that door mm-hmm. in my power pose.
Yes.
Right. And then I'm going to open another door for another woman.
My fabulous shoes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, tell people how they can get connected to the Open Door and how they can be involved in the Open Door Project.
Perfect. Yes. Yeah, so if you go to dfsopendoorproject.org, mm-hmm. you can actually donate there. We have a hashtag out there, hashtag Open Door Project. We want you to go out there and post your shoe, get that fabulous shoe you have out there. Mm-hmm. In the doorway or however you want to make sure you put that pose out there, but also just making sure you to acknowledge a woman that actually opened a door for you to tell your story and tell their story as to, you know, how we can further impact, you know, other women's lives.
I love that. And so kind of this initiative's is never ending?
It's never ending. It's never ending.
Started April 4th.
It started April 4th.
It's going right now.
Yes, it is.
Excellent. And so this is a really big push on social media.
Yes, it is.
Through social media.
Yeah, okay. Through social media, through email, any way that you can get out there and tell your story. Again, this is a movement mm-hmm. and we want to make sure that, you know, women in numbers, aren't we powerful? We are powerful mm-hmm. in numbers. So we want to make sure that, you know, we get the word out there of, you know, opening that door.
Absolutely. Elise said it, together we're stronger. Absolutely. Yes. Is there anything else that we can do for you today? Any other ways that women can get involved in Dress for Success?
They can. They can visit our local website as well. Mm-hmm. We have ways, and also our Facebook page. We have ways for you to volunteer. We have ways for you to get involved in giving. Mm-hmm. We have a huge initiative right now that we're trying to make sure people understand that we have to support these women that come through the door. Mm-hmm. Our services are free. So mm-hmm. we have reoccurring ways that you can get involved in donating. Mm-hmm. We have events that we have coming up. If you don't mind me saying, on May 11th, we have our Success Stories Brunch. And this ties in perfectly because it's about three women telling their stories on the paths on which they made them successful. So we're looking forward to everyone coming out to hear these compelling stories.
How encouraging. Wow.
So, Alquia, if we don't have a Dress for Success in our neck of the woods around the country, around the world, what kind of a tribe tip would you leave for women out there trying to make a difference in the lives of women every day? What can they do, whether or not they have a Dress for Success in their own backyard?
So if they do not have one in their backyard, you can always, your earlier person said it's about stewardship and reaching mm-hmm. back. And be a good steward as far as internally, how can I help another woman? So I don't have to literally have a suit mm-hmm. to donate to Dress for Success and I have right. to go to that location. But I might have something in my closet that someone in my local church or someone mm-hmm. That I've seen on the street that may need mm-hmm. a blouse or shirt or just within your community, you can go back and help someone in any capacity that you can, because it's not about having a brick and mortar to go to, but mm-hmm. it's also about people. And within your tribe, you know, how can we impact another person's life? That's what it's ultimately about. Not the clothing, but impacting lives.
Mm-hmm. I love it. That's a great tip. Thank you, Alquia.
Well, thank you for having me.
We love it.
It was wonderful to have you today.
Thank you.
We're excited to tribe it forward with you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Do you believe in tribes of women? Join the movement in our newsletter at tribeofwomen.com and be the first to learn about upcoming podcast guests, product releases, events, and giveaways. Find, subscribe, and rate the Tribe Talk podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and other major platforms, and share it with your tribe. Then follow us for inspiration, information, events, and more on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram using @tribeofwomen.
This is Tribe of Women.
Lorraine Mosier,
Courtney Lawless,
Laurie Marshall,
and Amy Robinson. Thanks for listening.